We ask that you make a Seven Tradition donation to CEA Health. The suggested donation is $10, but please give what you can. And you can go to the CEAHOW.org website, click on Support the Fellowship in the top pink border, and click on the Seventh Tradition tab. So we're going to move right on with our speakers and start off with Donna.
Hi, Donna Compulsive Eater. I want to thank Susan for organizing this and all the people that helped with this, particularly the tech people. And really thank you for the opportunity to share. I've never shared at a function like this for CEA. For my qualifications, I am a compulsive eater. This recommitted abstinence date is May 24th, 2020. I am 60 pounds off my high, 37 in this particular abstinence. I'm a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor. Being that this is a service workshop, the service positions I hold are predominantly on the meeting level. I co-lead PhoneBridge meetings about three times a month, a coordinator for a meeting, just making sure, you know, there are co-leaders and being a backup if necessary. And then I recently was asked and joined the World Service Board as corporate secretary. I have done nothing yet. All I have is the invitation to serve, and we'll start those responsibilities soon. I have my history in CEA as a backdrop is I've done CEA about 20 years ago. I got 2 years of abstinence, and then I drift off and I leave. And about 8 years ago, I did the same exact thing. And this committed abstinence, I needed to do it differently. And I needed to do it in a way that I could stay this time and not drift off. So there was some good self-examination of how I was going to approach this abstinence compared to others. I have long-term sobriety in another program. What I did with the first two abstinences was take that food plan as a diet and I folded it into that other 12-step program. I didn't do the calls. I did a half-hearted job at talking to a sponsor, and I did not do service and I did not sponsor anybody. I was just sure that I would never have the time to be as involved as I was in that first 12-step program and to be involved in CEA Health. So I made my choice and I got the results of that choice. I didn't stay abstinent. I have gained and lost 60 pounds in my life six times. And I am a breast cancer survivor. And last year in April, a month before I got abstinent this time around, my surgeon said the reoccurrence of breast cancer is directly correlated to your BMI. I was a smart aleck. I said, correlation is not causation. And she looked me in the eye and said, if that's what you want to go with, go for it. You know, and that's not what I wanted to go for. During the radiation treatments, I had a lot of time for reflection and prayer, and it was time to go back to CEA. So I went back with what am I going to do differently? Overall, what I'm going to do differently is I'm going to work all seven tools. And service was one of those seven tools that I hadn't been doing and needed to do. And I needed to lean in to CEA. I needed to lean in. I needed to examine what my fears were about leaning in CEA and having that all in attitude, because that I believed is the only way it's going to work for me to be able to stay. So what does all in? And during that time of reflection, and even to today, I've gone through the big book, I have it digitally, and I look at the word abandon. And I look up the word abandon and I search it in all the different areas in the big book. And I love that prayer, that reflection for me. What does it mean to abandon myself fully? And for me, the list of fear, I work full-time outside the home. I'm in healthcare and primary care and administration, and COVID's just been, I've been working 6 days a week. I've been in the office 6 days a week. How am I ever going to do this? And it was, I'm going to abandon myself to my God as I know my God. And I'm going to trust that my God will show me how to do this. And I'm going to trust that my God will give me the time that I need to do what I need to do. And that I will lean in and do an all-in attitude with CEA. So that's where I started. When I got my, the other, you know, if I'm going to be honest about it, the other piece of this was, in addition to looking at my fears, was to look at my arrogance. And I believe arrogance is really a mask for fear. You know, it's just another manifestation of fear. And I had an arrogance coming in with the arrogance of time, long-term time in another 12-step program. And that arrogance stopped me from doing that all in and being teachable and having that humility that I needed in CEA to learn how to do it and be all in. And had to admit it and had to work to get beyond it. Today, with just a year, I just celebrated a year abstinence and the involvement, I have enough time to do my job well, to do my family well, to keep up my activities in that other 12-step program, and to be involved in CEA. My God has honored that. I have the time I need. It doesn't mean it's all perfect and there isn't some balancing to it, but there is. You know, those answers come. Those answers come if I'm honest with myself about my motivations and about where I'm going with this. When it comes to service, it's a lifetime process, I think, when we look at service, at least when I look at service. It's a lifetime process because I believe that service, all that service really does is teach me how to open my heart to others. That's, for me, the bottom line of service. For 9.5 years, I was a Catholic nun doing social work. Most of my career has been in a social service setting. The healthcare I do are for underserved communities. You know, my goal in life is to make Mother Teresa look small. You know, I'm an arrogant kind of service person. I like that, you know, that's who I am. And so service gives me the opportunity to really look at my expectations of myself, my motives in what I do, and how to open my heart. Service is a huge kind of learning opportunity for me on physical, emotional, and spiritual levels. I kind of look at sponsorship and service as God's cosmic joke in 12-step programs. You know, they tell us to be of service and we go be of service. And what we find out is anything we give away, we're needing to learn. I'm needing to learn. I sponsor someone, we're talking about a particular step, and it's like, oh my gosh, I need to be doing that this afternoon and I need to get right on that. I hear what I need to hear for myself. And I love that piece of it. So I adjusted over time, and I still fall back into it, that I do service so that I can continue to learn how to have an open heart, so that I can continue to love, that my open heart gets more and more open so that I can draw closer to my God, that I can draw closer to others, and that I can grow in that self-acceptance and that self-love. Because it's not about getting that meeting to run perfectly as a co-leader, because there's always stuff we could do better. It's not about getting anybody abstinent, because that doesn't happen. It's not about things running perfectly smoothly. As much as we would love it, that's not where it is. For me, it's about opening my heart. I still try to do my service to the best of my ability. I still want it to go well, and I want it to go well for others. But I have to be clear with myself about what we're doing here so that I don't get wrapped up in those expectations. In getting back involved in CEA and in doing service, I had not ever been a co-leader and how to go about that and how to learn how to do that. What I, in essence, did was through the outreach calls that I'd been doing, find a friend who was experienced. I volunteered, and that friend agreed that I could agree to be with me and hold my hand through the first couple of them. And if there were any problems, they just did it with me, and that worked. If I have questions about it, I learn to reach out and just ask people and just slowly lose that arrogance of time, because I didn't hear that. Pardon me?
5 minutes.
Thank you. To lose that arrogance of time and be humble enough to be teachable. What I've been taught over the years, you know, is put yourself in the middle of the pack. And if I put myself in the middle of the pack, then I have the connections and the staying power to stay in the pack. But I've also been sponsored in a way as get yourself in the middle of the pack. And then what are you doing to help the pack? What are you doing to build up the pack? What are you doing to make the pack stronger? And hopefully that's what's done. This first year of abstinence, frankly, has been the easiest of the three periods of abstinence I've had. They have been the most fulfilling, and I have had the most growth from them. And what the growth has been for me is to learn that self-care, that self-love, and to be more careful of that and to look at my biases with things. I've had, and I'll share a couple of those. I was in one of my outreach calls. A woman called me and asked me if I would consider putting in my name for WSO secretary. My first reaction was, nope. Called my sponsor. My sponsor said, nope. It was just so quick. Talked to my husband. My husband said, why the quick no? What do you mean, why the quick no? He's in the other 12-step program, 33 years sober. He said, why do, if it's such a quick no, what is that? Why don't you take overnight to look at what that quick no is? And I know what that quick no was. I chaired intergroup for Alcoholics Anonymous for 2 years for LA. You know, there's the quick no, you know, there's crazy. And I haven't done intergroup since. And it was a time in my life to revisit that quick no and that hard no. You know, I think we get a lot of do-overs in our life and full circles in our life to look at that and then to draw out the lessons and then to move beyond those lessons. The other thing was, on a very personal level, they asked for a resume. And I didn't have a recent resume. It was 7 years old. So I sent in that resume with just a little paragraph of what I was doing now. And I looked at that resume and I was filled with shame, overwhelming shame. And the shame was, is in my last job, I was the CEO. And I'm not the CEO in this job. And I had a lot of shame over those circumstances. And I took all that shame and I brought it into this job that I've had for the last 7, 8 years. And that gave me a chance to look at that shame again. And I had realized that I had been blaming my boss and my position as not being able to do the job that I wanted to do in this job. And in prayer and in reflecting of that, I realized it was not my boss. It was not the position. It was myself. I had stopped myself from doing the things that I had wanted in this job, being creative in the programming in this job and other stuff. And I had to own that. And I had to own that responsibility. If I would have never said yes, that I would consider it, I would have never had that opportunity to have such a profound change in my attitude or in my life. Is that 1 minute?
Yeah.
Thank you. That was followed up. I went that same week to a funeral of my brother-in-law's father. The wife. unmuted. The wife had Alzheimer's. And in the middle of that funeral, the woman came out of the came out and had a lucid moment. And it was the first moment that she understood what was going on, that her husband of 69 years had passed. And it was a profound experience for me to look at that and say, I love my husband. Am I willing to love in such a way that I'm willing to take the hurt with that? And my answer was yes. And I was at that funeral and I took the day off for that funeral because I wanted to take a day to reflect on what I was learning from that resume experience.
That's time.
Thank you. And I'll wrap that up. If I hadn't said yes, I'm willing to consider the WSO, I would have never had those growth opportunities in my life. And I'm very, very grateful for those opportunities. And I'm always amazed, that holy awe of where God takes us. And I believe service is a big part of it. So again, I want to thank you. This has been fun for me. It's absolutely fun for me. And it's an opportunity to meet more people in CEA. So thank you.
Thank you, Donna. Next up is David. Thank you, David.
Hi, I'm David. I'm a compulsive eater. Thanks, Susan, for asking me to come and participate. And thanks, Donna, for leading us off. That was great. So as I say, plenty of timing going on. I'm David. I'm a compulsive eater. Today, I have 14 years, 11 months, and 11 days of back-to-back CEA How abstinence, food inventory step maintenance sponsor, maintain about a 45-pound weight loss for more than 14 years. So, yeah, I'm very grateful. I'm a grateful compulsive eater. I'm grateful that I am a compulsive eater. And I want to say that being of service has taught me that. Now, the topic of my little talk is that we often don't know what we're doing when we do service until we've kind of done it. And That's not always my experience, but it is often my experience. And I think that is an impediment for some people who are afraid of doing service, that they don't know what they're going to do because they've never done it before. It's kind of like talking to the second grader who doesn't want to go to school on day one because they don't know what the answers will be. It's like, well, no, you don't even know what the questions are. And that's why you're going to second grade today. And these rooms are a safe place to learn by doing and learn by messing up, you know. I was blessed to be sponsored by my first sponsor, who, I don't know, I had 60 days maybe, and he said, we have to be of service at the intergroup. It's like I said, okay. So I just followed him to the meeting, and, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. I wasn't an intergroup rep, but if you go to an intergroup meeting and you're not an intergroup rep, you soon will be. If you have the required abstinence, and I didn't know what I was doing, but, I learned quickly by listening, by asking questions. And I don't remember the timeline exactly, but I think while I was there, I was asked to participate in the global convention as the meals co-chair. It's like, ay, 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 I don't know what I'm doing. And what it ended up, my experience for it ended up being trying to control everybody, you know, trying to keep the compulsive eaters in line and not too crazy because they had to wait for the people ahead of them to weigh their lunch, trying to talk to the staff to make sure there was enough vegetables. And, you know, I kind of overstepped my bounds and I had my ears pinned back by the chair, you know, who said, "I wish you'd consulted me before you talked to them." It's like, ooh. And then later on, when I was getting even crazier, she said, "I think you're done. I think you need to go eat your meal now. It's like, you're dismissed. Go eat your meal." It's like, okay, you know. And I learned, and it was fine. And my ego, yeah, I thought I was supposed to be controlling things. But that's where I get in trouble. You know, I had some experience in service positions before I came to this fellowship, and even before I came to recovery. And that stuff made me eat, you know, taking care of everybody's needs, like being responsible for a whole organization. It was going to go down the drain on my watch. Oh, you know, and this was even a spiritual organization where I was supposedly in contact with a higher power. And here I am afraid that it's going to go under and it's going to, and people are going to point at me and say, "You made it fail." And that's just what my ego used to roll like. I've had the honor of being on a few different global convention committees. I've also been an Area 1 representative. I've been Area 1 vice chair. I was a WSBC, the World Service Business Conference delegate for my intergroup for a couple of years. I was the chair of the Business Conference Policy Committee. I was on a few other committees and became a board member of the World Service Board. And I was deathly afraid they were going to ask me to be treasurer of World Service. And God help me, but not the first year, but the second year they did ask me. And I walked through that fear and I did a mediocre job, you know, to be honest. I had plenty of support. You know, the good news is I didn't have to do anything alone. I didn't have to do anything alone. There were plenty of people to show me the ropes, to advise me, to answer my questions if I had the guts to ask them. I remember that year just being petrified and even having my disease talk to me, you know, before I gave my treasurer's report to the conference, which, you know, was not going to be received as the best of news because, you know, finances were what they were. And my disease said, you know, if you ate something, you wouldn't have to do it. And it was like, oh, look at that. There's my disease trying to get me to dodge my commitment. And how wonderful that I had the clarity to like hear it and then to kind of laugh at it even, because it's like, okay, you're just going to go, you know, you're going to put on a bow tie and you're just going to get up there and tell them the news. And it's like, here it is. And it was fine. Shortly after that, I became chair of World Service, right when It's interesting. My mother was suffering from Alzheimer's and passed away and around that time. And my goodness, service at the world service level was the perfect antidote to being overly consumed with grief. I had work to do. I had people to help. I had people to talk to. And, you know, I was able to do my job. I have a day job. I was able to do this service. I usually sponsor about 7 people in CEA Howe. I think I sponsored maybe 8 or 9 at the time. Somehow I managed to find time for all of that, as well as looking after mom with help, please, not on my own it was a wonderful opportunity to grow. You know, the other thing that I was, as well as I've sort of talked a little bit about being afraid of failure, I was petrified of being wrong, and I really didn't know that. I thought I needed to know all the answers. I mean, and that's an old thing for me. When I was a kid, you know, I was goofy and I wasn't any good at sports. And, you know, I was smart and I ran with that all the time. So I turned into a Weisenheimer. You know, it was like, you gotta know everything. You're a wise aleck. And being chair of World Service just stripped that right away from me. Some of those fine, thank you. Some of those fine paragons of service just corrected me left and right. So the fear of being wrong was removed because I was wrong a lot and nothing bad happened. I was wrong and I learned and I grew and it was great. And no one shamed me. It's like, we're teaching him how to be of service. And, you know, I have certain talents that flourished in that. And, you know, it's helped me immeasurably. It's service at all levels. Not everybody is cut out to do service above the meeting level. Some people get just crazy at business meetings. That's okay. But keep in mind that there is a higher power. I believe there is a higher power that governs, guides, steers, however you want to say. And it's not you. It's not me. It's the group. And service will find you a higher power if you don't already have one. I mean, for me, it certainly strengthened and gave me almost a new experience of a higher power. And, you know, that was really a beautiful thing. So, don't let fear of not knowing what you're doing keep you from doing any particular service commitment. That would be my suggestion. I have, you know, I've sponsored a lot of people, and I suggest that they try serving at the intergroup if they have sufficient time. And some have tried it, and some have done well, and others have tried it, and they said, that drives me crazy. And we talk a little bit about it. And usually I give them a pass on it. And then it's like, well, you need to find other ways to be of service. Everyone who can sponsor, who is sponsored by me, gets to sponsor, because if you don't sponsor, you won't stay. That's my nearly 15 years experience. Those who have definitely said, I can't sponsor, I don't have anything to give, it's like, then you won't have anything to keep, and you won't have anything to keep you here. But I would suggest to you all to stretch your comfort level just a little bit, as far as service goes. Now, you can go overboard with this, goodness knows, I still have to struggle with, oh my goodness, I've said yes to three different things, and I have to be in the same place at the same time, three different places at the same time. On Zoom, this is almost possible, but you know, I'm still learning to balance and to say no. But yeah, I'm kind of a service addict. You know, there were two, when I was doing service on the World Service board, there were two fellows who were not involved in our program at all. They were members of Alcoholics Anonymous who served our board, the Compulsive Eaters Anonymous HOW board, as non-participating directors and officers. Thank you. And for me, those were my service Jedis. They were just so calm, and they were so attractive. And you know, service, I carry the spirit of service wherever I go. You know, when I lose the spirit of service, sometimes at work, sometimes on the freeway, you know, I know it instantly. I get crazy and it's like, what's going on? I can usually come back to that. And this is not an experience I would trade for anything. And I'm probably getting ready to be involved again in World Service, but you know, let's see. Thank you so much. It's wonderful to see you all here, and it's a great month to celebrate service. Thank you.
Thanks, David. And Ken will be our next speaker. Thank you, Ken.
Hello, everybody. I'm Ken, a compulsive eater. Very grateful to be here today. Thank you, Donna and David. Both tough acts to follow here, but it's not a contest. Needless to say, I've been doing a lot of preparation for this. You know, it's said that every time you speak at a program, you give three talks. It's the one before you get up, it's the one you actually give, and it's the one you get when you sit down. So I'm in the middle portion of that now, and just to give you a little background, I guess I'm considered one of the OA dinosaurs. I first came into OA in 1974, and that was in Los Angeles, California. And at that time, there were not all different variations of OA. There were just basically, well, there might have been a few. But the one I entered into was a gray sheet group. So it was very structured, very disciplined. At that time, I was 24 years old, so you can do the quick math on how old I am now. And I, at that time, my top weight was 225. And so anyway, I mean, I knew nothing about the program. I didn't even know that 12-step programs existed. I didn't even know about AA. I didn't know anything. And, but what I found at that meeting, I think it's exists too in CEA HOW, people were like stumbling over themselves to do service. And there were no requirements to do that. They were still at the suggestion level. But I think people were so enthused and so excited about their recovery that they wanted to help. And these were face-to-face meetings. There were no phone bridge meetings, nothing like that, Zoom meetings. But people would be fighting over who's going to do the coffee, who's going to do the chairs, you know, who's going to set up everything. And I kind of got caught up in that enthusiasm. So I think it was the spirit of the program that kind of kickstarted my interest in the program. And being a very lonely, isolating type of person, it was almost like, you know, God's gift to all of us to give us a family of friends, in addition to recovery, to literally what I believe saved my life. And I feel the same way I do about that today. Hasn't really changed in the almost 47 years since I first came. You know, if you look at our little triangle insignia, the three sides of it are recovery, unity, and service. And June is service month, but as far as I'm concerned, every month is service month. You know, there's an emphasis on it. We got another one coming up, I think, next Sunday on service. I participated in one a little while back. I think Susan might have been the moderator on that one, too. It was really more the World Service Board level and, you know, the infrastructure and what have you. And so you go all the way back to the beginnings of AA. You know, really it was service that got it started. I mean, Bill had his spiritual awakening and Dr. Bob's famous script that he put down on a prescription pad were trust God, clean house, and serve others. And the program really didn't get traction until Bill, he went out and tried to help other alcoholics. But then it wasn't until he went to Akron and met Bob and one addict helping another service. And so they knew they had to keep the ball rolling if they wanted to stay sober. And so I think that, you know, just to backtrack a little bit, as far as my background, my current recommitment date is April 2nd, 2019. I'm maintaining a 75-pound weight loss, and I've done that for about 26 years. My first introduction to HAL was way back in 1984, and I was still in Los Angeles. I think it maybe the HAL started in 1979. I don't know, you know, all the history of it. But, you know, I still, at that point, I wasn't ready to go all in, as Donna put it. Although in other ways, I have been all in since 1974 in terms of staying close to the program and knowing that it's what really keeps my life in order and gives me a life to live. 1996, I hit a big bottom because at that time I could not figure out why I couldn't stop eating. And I got desperate again. I hit a new top weight of 243 pounds. And so I found OA HAL. I didn't know about C HAL. I didn't know about OA HAL, but there was a strong OA HAL meeting in Northern Virginia, which I attended. And I jumped in as I'm wont to do with both feet, you know, all or nothing kind of guy, and got all involved in service all over again. And then finally in 2014, I mean, I had been listening to some C-HAL Foambridge meetings in addition to going to this OA HAL meeting. And I had started a couple of meetings here where I live in Richmond, Virginia, in terms of doing service. And but I could tell that the C-HAL, there just felt like it was there was more recovery, it was stronger, and I needed that because I was beginning to totter a little bit in OA HAL. So that's where I've been since 2014. I'm supposed to concentrate on service at the meeting level. And that's really been where I have done most of my service throughout my career. There are many reasons for that. Number one, I am somewhat of a meeting junkie. I love to be at meetings. I mean, three meetings a week to me is like a drop in the bucket. I mean, sometimes I'm on three a day. And I don't always talk at those meetings, but I'm there. And, you know, at a meeting level, of course, if you look at our seven tools, where they talk about our seven tools, the one that gets the most verbiage is service. And I think that's partially because, you know, service is the lifeblood of the program for us individually and as a group. But on the meeting level, I mean, most of you know this already, but for those who may not, of course, we have people who have to lead the meetings. We have co-leaders, which just means that instead of one person leading the meeting every week, multiple people may do it every other week. The ones that I'm involved with are we rotate on a weekly basis. And then we have, and I don't think this is required, and the people who are on the World Service Board level can correct me if I'm wrong, but a meeting coordinator, which we have just recently established at one of our meetings. And there's somebody who's on the line today that knows all about that. And we're sort of in the process of getting that. But that meeting coordinator is responsible for quite a few things, getting an intergroup rep, people who chair business meetings, which, you know, a lot of times that's just done spontaneously in an impromptu way. Business meetings come up and somebody says, goes to the business meeting, can anybody lead the meeting? It's like sort of, you know, a spontaneous thing. In this case, I think we're trying to get a designated person to do that. Doesn't necessarily have to be somebody who goes to that meeting, but somebody who's very experienced in doing business meetings, more familiar with Robert's Rules of Orders, if you will, that can run a organized, fairly serene type of meeting. We have speakers, of course. Speakers have to be lined up at meetings, and that means that we need to have speaker seekers. The format. Sometimes the format changes. You know, every group is autonomous, and I know different groups like to have different things in their formats. And as long as that's not, you know, in opposition to World Service regulations, we have that option. And sometimes it comes down from World Service, you know, here's what, you know, does or doesn't need to be in the format. So at a meeting level, there's a lot going on. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to do service. There's supposed to be rotation of service. I got 5 minutes left?
Yeah,
I figured that would go fast. Slow for you, fast for me. You know, I think everybody on this line is aware, because I recognize so many of you. And it's great to see those that I already know what you look like, but now I know what you look like. And that feels more like a face-to-face experience. But it seems like there's a select group that does the lion's share of the service. There isn't a lot of rotation of service. We have a lot of open service positions, you know, on the meeting level, and I trust maybe at the World Service Board level too, and they get tough to fill. So, you know, I asked somebody once at the World Service Board level, well, you know, should we just step down if we've been doing it for a long period of time? And this was her. I don't know if this is an ironclad regulation or whatever. Well, the ideal is, of course, there's rotation of service. But if nobody steps up to do it, you know, generally speaking, what happens is that person stays on. Or if that person leaves their role and they go to another to fill another role, then that leaves an opening. So I think that's just human nature. There are people who love doing service. They feel the need to do it, and they do most of it. It would be nice if that weren't the case. I know as a co-leader, I've had no problems getting people to step up, you know, during meetings to do service. And that is a co-leader's dream, that, you know, you don't have to beg or pull teeth to get people to do it. And the irony about all of this, you know, God, of course, here comes my opinion on spiritual truisms. God set the whole thing up is that we only get when we give. So why wouldn't I give if I'm going to get? Because it's counterintuitive. It feels like, no, you're asking me to do something. I don't want to do it. But the reality is, and this is so true, I am at my best, I feel my best when I'm doing service. It energizes me to an unbelievable level. And unfortunately, I suffer from spiritual amnesia. As great as I feel, if left to my own devices long enough, I will slowly kind of try to drift back into my cocoon. And then I'm miserable again until I reach out and help others. And service is a tool. It is a lifeline for us to stay in recovery, keep abstinent, and also have emotional sobriety or emotional abstinence. You know, I want to be happy, joyous, and free. Obviously, I want to be abstinent, but I want all the other pieces to be in place too. And service is the vehicle that that we have in order to do that. And I agree with David in the sense that some people, they're not in their comfort level on the world service level. I never really was. I did some of it. But it tends to make me real. I'm just not that good with that type of stuff. And whereas at the meeting level, I feel like, you know, it just feels more of who I am. But we need everything. And I also agree that, you know, to push myself beyond just what I'm comfortable with, because if we all did that, just what we liked, we wouldn't have people doing the other things that we need. And who knows, I might find out that there's a niche that I'm actually good at. So I got 1 minute now. And I think I'm pretty much done. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to do service. I think it's always a privilege and an honor to do it. I do try to say yes. To service. And does that mean I have to say yes all the time? No, it doesn't, because sometimes I get competing requests that are all happening at the same time. And I can't be at more than one place at one time. But in general, I'd like to go ahead and do it, say yes, and that's going to benefit me and others as well. So I am going to turn it back over to Susan, and I think now everybody else gets to question and share. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Ken. So now is the time for all participants to ask questions and share. There is no abstinence requirement to ask a question or to share at this workshop. And now, Amy, please.
I'm Amy. I'm a compulsive eater, and I just want to thank the three speakers. Were phenomenal. Thank you so much. And I actually just have a question. If any of you could speak to how you handle very difficult, aggressive, loud personalities at the service level who have their own agenda as opposed to what's best for the group.
Thank you for that question, Amy. Does one of the speakers who has spoken have a thought on how to answer this question?
I'm David. I'm a compulsive eater. I'll take a whirl at it. In my experience, those are my teachers. If I am chairing a meeting, that means I am the referee. That does not mean I am the boss. It means that I keep people on track and I give people a fair shake to express their concerns. People who have a particular agenda, you know, we'll get to share, but usually only once, you know, on a given topic. That's generally how it runs, and the group decides. I don't decide. It's scary, but it works out, and that's because the group conscience is the voice of the higher power in that moment, I believe, and so says tradition too. Thanks.
This is Donna, compulsive eater. I think that is a great question, because I think that when I hear that coming in a meeting, and that's what scared me the most about getting back involved in CEA. You know, I was used to it in the other 12-step program and got comfortable with that in the 12-step program. You know, I just drama. But there seemed to be an edge more that I was uncomfortable with in CEA. I think that a cursory, I love the structure of CEA in that you get the 3 minutes and you get some of this other stuff that goes on that gives it structure. I think when we lead business meetings, I think just a cursory knowledge of Robert's rules really helps. What I've found also helps, and it takes a little bit of courage to do, is that I take their name and their phone number, and I ask them if we can, after their time is up, if we can talk about it more after the meeting, and I make them a part of my occasional outreach calls because I want to understand. You know, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt that they are doing the best they can, and this is important for the group. I'm going to give them that grace, and I'm going to listen, and I'm going to see what I can do as the leader of the meeting, whether it at the next meeting or at the next business meeting. And I had an experience of this recently. You know, I had someone taking an inordinate amount of time on these different issues, and those issues made no sense to me, like zippo. And so I called the woman after, I listened, I took away, I said, how about if we address this, this, and this at the business meeting, which we did. It was all voted down. She has the group conscience, you know. But then I still called her and gave her the respect and the listening board and the care. Because I believe that that kind of aggression usually comes from fear and usually comes from an uncomfortability. And that's what I can do, is to help with that uncomfortability and help them find a safe place in which they can do that. Even if they have tons of time, tons more time than I do. Doesn't mean we're all well, you know, time is time. Frankly, time is time. It doesn't ensure spiritual growth. It doesn't uncomfortability. Those are just my thoughts. It's a fabulous question.
Well, it is a great question, and I think a lot of us are non-confrontational types. I'm that way. I don't really like to be, I get uncomfortable or when I feel challenged. I think it's kind of, just a little saying in society, there are two things you don't discuss, politics and religion. So, you know, I think business meetings tend to be very similar to politics, and they can raise people's ire, and people get very emotional and, you know, controlling and aggressive and are hypersensitive. I know I am. So I try to employ, not always successfully, love and tolerance is our code. You know, we always try to go into these meetings with the serenity prayer and that God's overseeing the proceedings. And so that I don't have to feel like, you know, I'm the controller here, you know, like an air traffic controller. I've got to squelch or stop all of the unrest. And I'll be honest, you know, they're not on the intergroup level, although I've talked to a lot of people who are on that level, and they've told me about some of the friction. But even sometimes, you know, during a meeting or at fellowship time, things can get out of control, or at a business meeting. And so I try to deflect it. If that individual or individuals are, you know, if it really seems like we got to shut it down because we're not getting anywhere, I would suggest same thing, you know, leave my number. And then if I need to personally, and I do, you know, I go to my sponsor or others after that and ask them, well, how do you handle this? You know, and generally when cooler heads begin to prevail, and it's not always immediately, things get back in order. But no, I don't know anybody that relishes confrontations. There may be some people who like it. I don't. I think most of us, okay, I'm making a generalization here, but overeaters, you know, a tendency, the wall of fat. I don't want any confrontation. Leave me alone. So anyway, I'm going to stop there. And thank you. Great question.
And even though this is taking up a bit of time, I do want to give Jude, who's going to speak after this break, a moment to respond.
Thank you, Susan. Jude, compulsive eater. I will be brief. To add to what has been said, the principle of attraction and not promotion is what I'd try and apply here, of actually giving an example of actually staying calm. And one of the tactics that I've learned from other people is to say, I'm here to do service for you. How can I help you? And to get them to tell me what they want me to do to help them, that usually helps clarify and bring to the center. But to be an example, to stay calm, even if inside, it's a different picture. Thanks, Susan.
Thank you, Jude. And Suzanne, your hand went up next. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Well, the thing about people being aggressive, I think that's when we look to our elder statesmen to step in and tell the newcomers at service above the meeting level, that's not the way we do it. And when we stay silent, that's an awful thing. We need to speak up lovingly. The other two, well, one point is I was lucky when I came into the program. My sponsor was very service-oriented and made it clear this is what we need to do. It wasn't like telling me you have to. It's just, you know what, if you want the program, service is part of it. And I had no problem with that. Along the way, I have had other people who were not my sponsor lovingly nudge me into intergroup and then lovingly nudging me into being a delegate and beyond. And I have returned the favor to others, perhaps maybe one or two here on this line today or this workshop. And I think I've heard sponsors say, well, I don't want my sponsees to do service because they're too busy. That's a disservice to their sponsees, in my opinion, and to the program. So I think some of us who know the value of the service, I've gotten many gifts of the service to be that loving person, even if they're not my sponsee, to lovingly nudge them. If their sponsee doesn't know how to do that or doesn't want to do that, I think it's up to the rest of us to do it to keep the service flowing, because I certainly have reaped many benefits. And it is a disservice to our program because there's so many gifts and I get out of myself. And all I get to do is pass it along, whether my sponsees or not. And so thank you for letting me. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you, Suzanne. And Shannon.
Hi, Shannon over here in Florida, compulsive eater. Yeah, this has been a really great workshop. I'm still pretty new to the program, about a year in. And I definitely jumped into service and literature and just getting in there and sharing meetings so I can really figure out how this all works. Because for the first time, you know, it's really working for me. And I've been able to maintain a healthy weight. And that is just a miracle to me today. But I wouldn't think that if I wasn't really digging into the service and to the tools and making those a true part of my life. But one of the things that continues to help me to grow are those tradition questions. Those questions not only get you into the literature about service, but it also kind of explains it. I do work another program where I've been able to take that experience, because I didn't know anything about the traditions in that program, and bring it into what these questions really mean. And I can analyze you know, the group conscience so much better and understand the value, I mean, the deep value in how this program has been around for 86 years. Wow. And that keeps me humble for sure. I love the group conscience, and I really appreciate all the work that goes into these workshops and the speakers who just give of themselves and seeing that courage. And it's an inspiration for me to continue to grow in this program as well. So thanks so much for allowing me to share today.
Thank you, Shannon. I'll take a moment to say that giving to the Seventh Tradition is a form of doing service. And we are asking for people to make a donation to CEA How. And you can always find the link on the CEAHow.org website under Support the Fellowship. And one more pitch for, let's see if we can see it. Yep, the CEA How Service Manual. It's an incredible document of service in our program, and I encourage everyone to purchase it if you haven't and read it if you have it. Sandra.
I'm Sandy, compulsive eater. I've made my phone calls and I've made my program, my own food program is okay, but now my sponsee doesn't want to do service and she's brand new and she did slip. But there's three, I don't see how you guys keep this all straight. There's three plans in here, 30 days after the 30 days in maintenance. And the only one I've had to worry about is 30 days and then I was straight to maintenance, which most of my program has been maintenance. So I got this question and I forgot she was in the first 30 days and I answered her for maintenance and I made a mistake. I feel like I'm going to beat myself up the rest of my life. I'm making mistakes in answering these people's questions. And also, my sponsee slipped, so she doesn't have to sponsor anyone. If she doesn't want to do service, she fixed the problem herself because she slipped it. That's two questions in one, but answer however you want. This is a lot of stuff to remember. I don't see how you guys remember it all. Thank you.
David, I'm going to actually ask you to start. I think that what you've said before really speaks to me.
Sure. Thanks. Thanks, Sandra. Sandy, nice to see you again. Oh goodness, I have a few sponsees who come right in, stayed absent, done a little bit of service and just drooped right along, but that's just a few of them. Most struggle. The best thing I can say in CEA How is I don't know. Let me ask my sponsor. I mean, that's why I have a sponsor, is so that I can ask somebody else. And I suggest to my sponsees who are sponsoring for the first time, it's like, if you are not absolutely sure, just say that. Just say, I'm not sure, let me ask my sponsor. Sometimes slipping is a necessary part of the journey. It's not a failure. You know, hopefully your sponsee will stick around. If not, it's okay. You'll get another sponsee. For goodness sakes, don't let this make you afraid of doing service or of sponsoring. I learned a lot by going to a meeting sponsorship workshop where you sit in a group and you read the literature the food plan in particular and talk about it a few pages at a time and ask questions. So, you know, for sure, try and find that if you can. And you know, she'll start over if she's willing, and if not, there wasn't really anything you could do anyway.
And there's real, I'll actually just add a thought. There is such power and grace in learning how to say, I made a mistake as a sponsor. I mean, as a human being, but as a sponsor, being able to say, I blew that. I am so sorry. And, you know, and just being human is a real teaching opportunity for myself and also modeling for my sponsee. Anybody else have a thought?
Can I comment, Susan?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Sandra. First thing I would say is don't beat yourself. I'm very good at doing that myself, blaming myself for mistakes. But, love and tolerance, I try to extend to myself as well if I make a mistake. You know, I think a lot of sponsees come into the program rebellious. They don't want to do a lot of the stuff that needs to be done, especially if they're requirements and not just suggestions. I try to patiently explain to them the reason that as a CEO sponsor, these things are required. And sometimes, you know, logic and rationale doesn't sink in right away on the other side. But I will tell them at some point that, this is how I sponsor as a CEO sponsor. And if you're not willing to do these things, it's not like the very first time out of the box I'll say that. But if you're not willing to do these things, then perhaps I'm not the sponsor for you, and that we cannot continue this sponsor-sponsee relationship. For one, it could jeopardize my own abstinence if I'm letting people do things that are not part of the recovery process in this program. So I try to bear that in mind. Your other question about the Forever Abstinent book, join the club. I get very confused with all the ins and outs and do's and don'ts. I like to think of myself as a detailed person, but the older I've gotten, I forget a lot of the details. And I have to go back and refamiliarize myself about, you know, what is acceptable, what is not, what procedure do I take? And sometimes I will say, you know, let me get back to you. And so I'll go back through it again and see if I can get it straight. And then I may have to call somebody else and ask if there's a gray area there. We like to say everything's black and white and there's no gray, but I'm not sure that's really true. I mean, there are some areas there that are, to me, a little confusing. So that's all I got to say, and I'll stop.
Thank you. I think we're going to move on to our next speaker. Okay, Jude, thank you.
Oh, thank you, Susan. My name is Jude, and I'm a compulsive eater. And hello to everybody in this wonderful global fellowship. You know, the blessings of Zoom and internet connection. Yes, just for me to qualify, I'm based in the UK. Oh, sorry, I've got a bit of hay fever here. I'm based in London in the UK, and I first encountered CEA Howe 18 years and 8 months ago, and my current abstinence is 11 years and 8 months, and I'm a full service sponsor, and I have done service on group level on intergroup level, on area level, and I've been delegate, and I'm a delegate at the moment. And yes, how much have I learned there? So I'm going to talk about the setting up of the UK and Europe intergroup. And there are four elements in this. I'm going to give you a narrative of what happened, but there are four elements within that narrative. There's the element of the individual. There's me and every other individual within the fellowship in the UK and Europe. Then there's the fellowship. There's the we bit, the interrelationship, the support and the knowledge. Then there is our purpose. You know, what are we here to do? We're here to help other suffering compulsive eaters to recover from addiction and from, you know, the pain of being within the addiction. And then linking all those three elements is this amazing thing called higher power. And so the narrative that I'm going to give you really is said is my understanding retrospectively. So when I first came in to see it, when I first encountered C.A. Howe over 18 years ago, and I said to a friend, I need to change how I feel, you know, what are you doing? You know, there was a fix for me. That was my solution at the time. And, you know, that person was an angel. Sent me into C.A. Howe. I had no idea. I'd never encountered 12-step fellowship at that point of time. And this woman was very gracious to somebody who was filled with ignorance, filled with arrogance, who told her how she was going to do the program. But, you know, she gave me a space and she held me in program. And then in my part of that narrative, I had to go sideways into another fellowship, our original fellowship. And there I was asked to let go of C.A. Howe. Well, being young, not knowing, I said, okay. But what I did do, I stayed abstinent on the food plan for 4 years. And then after that, I binged mercilessly for 2 years until I came to the realization that I needed to be back in C.A. Howe. That was another profound surrender that my primary difficulty was that I was a compulsive eater. However, during that time of my absence from C.A. Howe, particularly in that first 4 years where I stayed abstinent on the first 30-day food plan, don't do this at home, please. Do not advise it. It's not good nutritionally to do it for 4 years. But there's this thing that I had. I wanted to create a meeting. Now, I didn't understand that a service at that point in time, but there's this heart thing. And, you know, I got from Pamela in the GSO, I got the literature and I got everything ready. And then when I spent that 2 years binging, that spark of higher power that I now call it, that, you know, knocked on my door and said, create a meeting. I remember so clearly looking at all the bits of literature. I was in my disease. I was hopeless. And I thought, what is the point of keeping all this literature? I'm never going to open this meeting. So I threw them away. And I threw it away with great, great despair. Anyway, when I came back into C.A. Howe nearly 11 years, 8 months ago, that came back. I opened a meeting along with another person. But what had happened in the meantime was that I'd been part of a fellowship. There was a fellowship of people around me who suddenly saw that I changed. I became calmer, I became clearer, I became much more reasonable, I was of more service to people. And the people there said, what are you doing? So C.A. Howe grew in London at that stage. And, you know, for us, we had a big meeting, like 18 or 20 people. During that time of working with the meeting, did I get to see my defects of character? Did I get to see my codependency? Did I get to see where I put the doormat out and please walk all over me? Did I get to see where my fear said, you know, I'm in charge here, excuse me, you know? There were some serious things that I had to face as well. And the woman, we opened three meetings, and the woman who was secretary of one of the meetings, we had quite a serious concern going on, which could have been a legal situation. I didn't want to face it. So I kept saying, oh, well, I'll deal with it. She kept saying to me, we are looking after this group. You have got to do something. So I did do something. However, it was all resolved before there were any legal circumstances. So the reason that I'm giving you all of this detail is because on a day-to-day basis at the group level, each of us learned how to do our program for ourselves, how to do the program for each other. And this unity that comes from believing in doing the traditions and applying the traditions and the steps in our lives is what creates this strong structure. However, that was the first phase of growing meetings. I wanted to create an intergroup at that stage. I knew enough about it from my service on Fenbridge to try this. But there wasn't enough stability within the groups at that stage. And our groups dissipated. And eventually, I closed what was left of the group and came back to focus on my own service, on my own recovery and service within CA Howe, and primarily within the Fenbridge. And there I did a lot of service on Area 10 level. And I was trained on Area 10 level. I learned how to be an effective member of a team. I learned how the team supported me. And above all of that, on a personal level, I actually learned the processes and practices of how you create a stable structure. You know, writing the bylaws, you know, I never read bylaws. But when it came to doing the UK and Europe bylaws, by golly, I had to read quite a few bylaws and extract what was appropriate for the UK. But when I was doing service at Area 10, you know, I had a really great taskmaster and she really taught me well. My team there also showed me when I was going through a difficult personal situation and I was saying, you know, I'm giving up, I'm useless, I'm not doing service properly, you know, I can't cope. They said, no, that's fine. They held me until I could cope. And so coming back to this historical linear narrative, so the meetings had closed, I'd come back to Fenbridge. And then something started happening. People who had been members in the UK before started phoning me up. And, you know, I knew people from Holland and from France and some in Germany as well. Grace hadn't turned up in Poland by that stage, and she's a real stable structure there. But they started phoning up and saying, you know, is there a meeting? And so we started opening meetings again. And this was the really formative stage of the growth of the intergroup. What happened? And this is an identification of the higher power. I had to learn to be myself with all my character defects. I had to learn how to be more balanced, how to behave more balanced. I needed all the knowledge that I'd gained from working in Area 10.
5 minutes.
Thank you very much. So after about a year, I saw the people who kept coming to the meetings and, you know, the joy of seeing people recovering, getting calm, glowing, getting healthy, being, you know, contributing to a meeting, spending 6 months where they couldn't say anything apart from their name. And then all of a sudden, one of those persons actually chair of Area 7. So I suddenly thought, oh my God, they're staying and they're stable. And, you know, they want to do service. So we opened the intergroup and people were eager and thirsty to learn how to do it. And now we've had an intergroup since October 2019, I think. Is it that far? I can't remember. It's over a year anyway. And so we started with the smaller things that intergroup needed to do, you know, of actually having meetings, of actually understanding what our purpose was to be the interface between WSO and the groups, and to pass the information in both ways. And then gradually, you know, and people came with skills, you know, the people with managerial skills, administrative skills. And one of our board members was an IT specialist. She's now our webmistress. Hey, wonderful. We set up a website so that people could see us, you know, and then we've reached another stage, which really I've been tearing my hair out over, of getting a nonprofit status for the intergroup, which is a bit more difficult in the UK than it is in the US. So, you know, I have been on the phone to our HMRC and to the Charity Commission with the chair of Area 7 at the other end of another phone, supporting me and giving advice. And, you know, through that process, I have learned to say to the board at Intergroup, say, I don't know how to do this. Can you help me? Or, you know, I'm having a really difficult time doing this because it's bringing up all my personal stuff. Who will stand beside me? And, you know, I've been on my laptop filling in the nonprofit forms with the chair from Area 7, and I'm going, I don't know what this business term means, you know, and she'll Google it, and then she'll say, well, this is what it means, and I said, well, how do I answer it, these, etc., etc., etc. So I learned to work with people and for people. I learned that this is in God's time, and that God provided people with a higher power who were connected to higher power, who wanted to stay. And we then created Area 7 as well. And now that we've settled into knowing our roles, we've got somebody who's doing the information service, and we've got somebody who may be stepping up to do lead on workshop areas, you know, we can get a little bit more complex. And now it's for us to start looking at, well, what else is the role of the intergroup? And the role of the intergroup is to help create meetings. Now, I know that there are fellows in Holland and in France, and now with Poland, you know, we now, our intergroup now needs to reach out to help people create groups locally so that there are more groups coming into the intergroup. And similarly on Area 7 level, I know this is about the intergroup, but on Area 7, thank you, I'll pull it together now, that we need to look for this global legacy. Area 7 is huge, and there have been lots of meetings in South Africa, in Israel, and so forth. So we will be reaching out to people in those countries to try and gain enthusiasm and offer support to create more intergroup areas within Area 7. So I'll conclude on this, that, you know, what have the challenges been? The challenges have been of my own making, of my resistance to look at my defects of character. And when I've been ready to look at my defects of character and really surrender and say, I do not know, please help me, I'm always given the help, as has our collective group within the fellowship. Thank you. And the gifts and the joys are to see recovery. And I'll conclude with, you know, COVID, in spite of the circumstances, has brought great gifts to the fellowship in the UK and Europe. The fact that we have Zoom and that people can easily come with it, the breadth of the knowledge and experience to help support. And likewise, UK is going over the pond a lot more. So this idea of really active global fellowship is being given strength and growth. And also for me, absolutely finally, is that, you know, through doing all this service, I've learned to grow in self-esteem. I've found more humility, but above all, the quality of my joy and the quality of the peace and my ability to restore joy and peace is extraordinary. And will I say, I will, I say it's miraculous, you know. How could this hopeless case, you know, enjoy her life and fulfill her life through the program and through the contribution of each and every one? And I'll pass on that, Susan. Thank you.
Thank you, Jude. And our final speaker today is Shirley. Thank you so much, Shirley.
Thank you, Susan. I am a compulsive reader. My name is Shirley. I am so sorry for being late, but I really thought I was on time, like LA time, 1 o'clock. Anyway, we had a blackout in my area, so I wouldn't have been able to get on. Anyway, thank you so much and greetings to all of you from wherever you are. Thanks to those who shared before me. So my topic is service. I was born into service. I was service to my little siblings when my folks had to be busy with their business. So I learned at a very early age how to be of service. Nevertheless, throughout my life, I have always been of service in some capacity or another. I seem to have chosen careers where I am of service. And then I get into a fellowship where I really learned how to be of service. And then I came into See How 12 years ago. My absent time is 12 years, 9 months, and 21 days. I'm maintaining a 43-pound weight surrender. I'm a full-service sponsor, and I do a lot of service. I have learned to do more service in See How than I did in the other fellowship because of the many things that I get to be a part of. I started my service in the very first meeting I went to. I wasn't even a member. I was being introduced to the meeting here in Los Angeles. A friend took me to the meeting so that I could see what it was about. I wasn't ready to join See How. I knew nothing about it. I didn't even know too much about the other fellowship. That is also a food program. I walked in and I saw people setting up chairs and I just followed. I set up chairs, got the room ready for the meeting. That continued. The next week I went back to that meeting. Somebody needed help with the coffee as well as chairs. I did both of those. I was always busy. I don't know if I was being of service to avoid being with people that I didn't know because I was a tad bit shy and I didn't know any. I only knew that one person that I was at the meeting with. So if I was busy being of service, that meant I didn't have to engage with any of you. And over the years, that got better, you know. I did a lot of service in the rooms as far as putting up chairs. I was a literature person for a while. I enjoyed doing literature. I learned how to engage with people across the table when they came up to buy the literature. I was at service at the convention, the very first convention I went to. I think I did the boutique, and I got to meet a lot of people from everywhere. Some of them didn't even speak English, but I got somebody to help me translate what they were trying to buy. And that was so much fun. And I began to evolve. I began to come into this person that I am still evolving into today. I really love being of service, you know. When I admitted that I was a compulsive overeater and I was ready to give up that junk food that I was accustomed to eating, I surrendered and I really became involved and wanted to do a lot more. Anywhere I could be of service, I was of service. I was a secretary at two different meetings. I did it twice at one particular meeting because it's a very small group. And because of this very small group, I had an opportunity to be of service in many areas to keep that meeting going. And then I went to the intergroup and got involved with the local intergroup. And I really loved that because I got to find out what was happening with the other meetings and get involved with that stuff and help plan different events. you know, seek out things that I didn't know anything about. And then Shirley, really, her self-esteem started to just blossom. And I was all over the place. I wanted to, you know, go to different meetings in different parts of town. And I did some of that. Then I started, people started asking me to speak. And I thought, oh my God, what do I have to say to these people? But that was being of service. Sometimes being of service is an inconvenience, but I don't mind being inconvenient because as a result, I get to have this beautiful life that I have today, you know, and I don't have to turn my head when I pass by a mirror or a storefront because I don't want to look at my frame. That doesn't happen to me anymore. So I did the intergroup rep, and then I became the intergroup chair, which I really, really loved. And the treasurer had to step down. I became the intergroup treasurer. And that was, oh my God, I struggled with dyslexia. And I thought, how in the world am I going to keep these people's money intact? I think I'll make a mistake and everything's just going to flop. But I asked for help and I got help. And someone, my sponsor in particular at the time, still is, helped me with the numbers so I could keep the books straight. You know, and I did that until I couldn't do it anymore because I do believe in rotation of service. There are a lot of things I would like to hold on to, but I can't because I need to give someone else an opportunity to be of service. And throughout my years at CHOW, I have found myself volunteering to do things that I think maybe other people might not want to. I hold back a bit just to see what the responses are. And if someone doesn't volunteer to do it, then I jump in and I do it. So I became the intergroup treasurer. And I think there was another capacity. I've done so much in these last 12 years, it's hard to keep track of. Anyway, I got involved with the conventions. And then I chose to volunteer to go to the area assembly and didn't know what that was all about. And oh my gosh, the treasurer at that time needed to step down. And here I am once again. I'm the treasurer. I'm taking care of that money, excuse me, and I'm taking care of the intergroup money. And that was a conflict, and I had to give it up. And my head went to, wow, they don't really trust me with their money. So here we go, transferring this money around again, because I had issues in the past with trust. Not that I've stolen anything from anybody, and I would have never taken any money from CHOW. But anyway, I made the arrangements to meet with, I think, the person who is now currently the area treasurer and transferred the monies back to her so that she could be the treasurer. But that was really, really sweet. When I was at the convention, I had the opportunity to pay everybody who was in attendance. And I thought, holy, 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 I have really got to keep these numbers straight. And I hope that when people are giving me their vouchers, that the numbers are straight. Because if the money came up short, I probably would have had to put it in myself. I don't know. But it never came up short. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. So I got a chance to work through that dyslexia stuff. I don't own dyslexia. I struggle with it. I don't have it. I struggle with numbers. So I got to work through that. And I've gotten a lot better as a result of being the treasurer of those two groups. And how did that happen? How did that happen? Because I was willing. I was willing to take that risk. And I did that, you know? Paid all those people that went to the conventions. I think the whole time that I was the treasurer, I did it at two conventions. I paid everybody the money that was owed to them. And then we go to Las Vegas. I'm still paying people their monies that they spent to travel to Vegas. And it was like, oh my God, I did it. I did it. I can do more. And lo and behold, a few years into that, being in the area assembly, and the area, I went to the convention and I was approached about trying out to be on the board. And I thought, there's no way I could do that. These people are really involved in what they're doing. They know what they're doing. They're doing more than I could ever consider doing. And I made the application. And lo and behold, I did my little interview and I was voted in. And that's where the fun really began. Because I have this curious nature. I really wanted to know how all this stuff came about that has helped me save my life, like writing those questions and answering those questions. And I got to be a part of that. My eyes were wide open. Boy, this is a group of dedicated people. A lot of people that are really of service trying to help us save our lives from this deadly disease. I speak for myself, my deadly disease, to help me save my life. And the ball started to roll. I mean, I got involved. I got elected to the board. I sat in on the board meetings. I learned a lot, the bylaws, all this stuff I never had any idea about, because in my other fellowship, I never had the opportunity to do that kind of, you know, to do service at that level. I did H&I and all that other kind of stuff, but never on a board. Never. I wished I could have. But over the last 4 years that I've been on the board, I've had an opportunity to work with a particular group of people. I'm on this committee for special needs. And what a great group of people to work with. I mean, some can't, they can't do a lot of things. They claim their own disabilities, and I'm there to work with them. And it has been the greatest gift of my life because I get to look at myself. I get to own this thing that I struggle with called dyslexia. So I'm a part of that group now. I'm a part of the special needs group, and I will remain there with them because they have taught me. They have taught me. I have learned about adjusting my attitude in certain situations that I'm not comfortable with, which is new behavior for me. That's what CHOW has taught me as a result of being of service. I don't always have to be right. I don't always have to be right. I'd rather be wrong and let you have the opportunity to think that you might be right. You know, I just go along with the flow. I love being of service, my goodness. We just finished working on a huge project and having to redo this project a tad bit was a thorn in our sides. But look, that's how we're learning, by being of service. Each and every one of us took it with a grain of salt. And we're redoing this project that we were working on. It's not like, you know, it's a done deal. We get to improve it so that we can help people like me. Thank you so much, Susan, to help people like me that are struggling and suffering with this disease. You know, I didn't know that there was a way out of the bag of stuff I used to eat behind the chairs. I didn't know that. I'm not your typical sit at the dinner table and say, let me have a little bit more of that stuff, of that stuff. I like drive-throughs and I like junk food. And I don't do that today, because I am busy being of service to this program. You know, I have a project that I'm working on now and I want it to be perfect. And I should submit it today, but it's not good enough, I don't think. So I'm in the process of doing that this afternoon so that I can get it out of my sight, because the longer I look at it, the more I'm going to try to tear it apart and make it better. It's just the way that I am. You know, I really don't want to be in this position that I am in, because I've gotten so much joy out of it. But this is my last year on the board, and I will be stepping down in July. But that's not the end. I will find something else to get involved in. I am sure that there is something that is just as gratifying, where I can open up my eyes and be excited about it like I am with being on the board. I've met so many people as a result of my time at CHOW. I mean, with this Zoom, I've met people all over the world. I go to meetings anytime that I want to. And there are a host of people that I do remember, like Jude. I just heard Jude last week at a meeting. It's really a wonderful, wonderful experience for me to be a part of this fellowship. And I am forever grateful to my friend who introduced me to CHOW. And I had not seen her in 11 years. And I went to a workshop in the Valley 2 years ago, and I ran into her. That's how GOD works in my life. People suit up and show up for me when I need them. And I apologize for being late, but I was on LA time, 1 o'clock. Thank you, Susan, for having me. Thanks to all of you for being here. And thanks to those of you who shared. I really appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you, Shirley. Well, now we have another opportunity for participants to ask questions and share. And first up is Paul.
I just want to be grateful that I got here. I was at another gathering that happened between 12 and 1 right before this all started. And have to say that it is amazing, you know, when people come together and put their energies. I don't necessarily have a question, but just a positive pitch that what has kept me in this program 18 years is just being able to, you know, jump through another hoop to learn from, you know, people that have been there before me, knowing that if I wanted to stick around and claim, hold on to the seat, I had to find ways to give it away. And I'm not going to go through my whole song and dance of what I've done in this program, but I just want to put a shout out of gratitude that this year, as being part of the sponsorship committee, we really, really tested our ability to show up and to shine and to really to honor each other. The last thing I want to say is that in recovery, I've had a very tough year, as if most have, that one of the things that helped me through this is obviously the service, but also doing a relapse and recovery meeting and realizing there was so much there. It, just for anyone who has ever had struggles in this program to find a way out. And one of the things that I find, and I'll end with this, is that you know, we are loved for who we are and not just because we're abstinent today, that we all have a seat here in this program. And I claim it every day by finding some other way to be of service and to claim my seat. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Paul. And Loretta.
Hi, I want to first of all thank the speakers. This has been a wonderful, wonderful workshop. Inspirational. Really, really great. And I'd also like to give a shout out for the benefits of the sponsorship committee. I learned so much about sponsoring this year. One of the tasks that I had was to review the literature. And I found out that, number one, there is a wealth of information on our audio downloads. There's a couple years worth of sponsorship workshops that if anybody wants to learn more about sponsoring, there's wonderful information there. And our literature is fantastic. We have books on sponsoring that are just excellent. So I just wanted to add that. I didn't even know all this stuff existed. So I'm very happy to have learned about it, and I want to shout it from the rooftops. So that's it. With that, I'll share. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Loretta. No other raised hands. I will just put in that I have just recognized how service isn't necessarily in the mix of conversation with all people that are in CHOW, and I saw how that was harming CHOW. And so I've been pushing to, you know, make it just a more central part of the awareness and conversation for members. And I'm just really excited that we have this year started saying, okay, June is Service Month. This is our opportunity to really just talk about service. And because we got a late start doing this, there are only a handful of things that are sort of acknowledging June as Service Month, but, you know, it's a soft opening year. And my hope is that you will go back to your meetings, your intergroups, your areas, and think for next year, what could we do to promote service? You know, even if it's just at your speaker meeting, say, you know, I'm going to make service my topic, or read from the service manual as, you know, one of the things that a meeting does. Those are just some ideas, and LB has his hand up, so I'm going to turn it over to you, LB.
I'm going to be really brief. I'm LB, a compulsive eater in Las Vegas. I want to share one little thought about service, and it, my personal demon is I get hungry at the weirdest, awfulest times, and I discovered when I perform service, I don't get hungry anymore, and I feel good about that, and just there's no cause effect. It doesn't make sense to my, like, how does that work? I have no idea how it works, but I acknowledge it absolutely works. When I perform service, I lose my insatiable hunger, and life is good. That's all. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you, LB.
I'll be brief since I shared before, but nobody was sharing. I just want to thank everybody. I think, well, I know the takeaway is take this back to our sponsees, our outreach calls. If there's no one to do service, there would not be a CHOW. I just remember when I walked into the meeting, my very first meeting was a face-to-face, there was someone very lovingly welcomed me with a hug. She was willing to be there and welcome me. Somebody was willing to take me to the meeting. Someone was willing to take me home. People were willing to put the chairs. In other words, it takes all of us, and not let the attitude of let someone else do it. Why not me? Why not me? And, yeah, there would be no CHOW meeting. So it does take a lot of people to put on service. So let's take it back to our outreach calls and get out of our comfort zones. I know for me, I had to get out of my comfort zone, and it was, I had to grow up. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Suzanne. And Paul, you had your hand up again.
Yeah, I'm going to be brief as well. I just wanted to share that, yes, this is Service Month, but for many people that were not part of the conference last year, we now have a second gratitude month, which is next month. And I just wanted to put a pitch that that $25 that's needed for the August 1st event, well, that's a good place to put that service because it will all support GSO in all of its services for the following year. So again, grateful for Service Month in June and Gratitude Month that follows in July. Thanks again.
Thank you, Paul. I'm so grateful for all the service of all the people that have pulled this together, the tech people. I see you, Susie, give me 1 second, and the speakers. This is lovely. And Susie.
Hi, can you hear me okay? I'm Susie, compulsive eater. Yeah, this is the second workshop that I've been to that you've put on, and all your work definitely pays off. And I'm looking forward, is there gonna be a third one? I didn't know if this is a series that you're doing. And I wanted to ask, does anybody remember when the format stated service is slimming? That's how it was when I came in. I don't know if it was the mother program. I was, of course, in the mother program because 41 years ago, there wasn't a CEA Howe. Then I went into OA Howe, which became CEA Howe in the Valley. And that was 32 years ago. But I don't know when it was put in or taken out, but I like services freedom from bondage of self. That's what I like. And I wanted to say one more thing. Service is the rent that I pay for my abstinence. It is the very purpose of life and not something you do in your spare time. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Susie. There is one more event. It's next Sunday, 10 o'clock Pacific. It's just an hour long, 1 o'clock Eastern. And it will be on the phone bridge. The topic will be service. It'll be more of a forum. So three people sharing on different aspects of service and opportunities to speak and ask questions with the participants. And Adele.
Hi, I'm Adele, compulsive overeater, bulimic. Thank you, Riley, for being in service. I was told back in 2018 that that phrase the other person was just asking about, that's an OA phase phrase, service is slimming, so we don't use it and see how now. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Adele.
Oh, and that came from WSO.
Any last thoughts? Pamela, yes.
Pamela, compulsive eater. Further as to that phrase, when CEA Howe was formed, all of the literature was reviewed and revised to delete the term overeater because we chose the name Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, the Howe concept. Compulsive Eaters Anonymous is an inclusive phrase. It includes overeaters, undereaters, anorexics, bulimics, et cetera. So the term overeater was deleted from all of our literature. Also that phrase services slimming was deleted from the formats and in place of that was services freedom from bondage of self when we started CEA Howe. And I just wanna say too, how wonderful it is to be here this morning to hear everybody and see everybody and to hear about what it's like to be a worker among workers and a member among members. Any single one of us can start out saying, I don't know how to do this. You know, I always say if we're not doing something for the first time that we don't know how to do, we're not working the program because everything, that's how we grow. And so taking a service position that I don't know how to do, of course, I don't know how to do it. I've never done it before. And it's not about me. You know, that's I've always said that my greatest growth has been through service. And as that's what I heard this morning from everybody who shared about the growth of service, working with others, you know, and really recovery is a trade-off. The trade-off is I get recovery, I get abstinence, and the trade-off is that I carry it forward. I pass it on to somebody else. And that's what we all do. And that's what we all do through service. So thank heavens for that. Thanks.
Thank you, Pamela. And as a resource, the CEAHOW.org website is a wonderful place to get our information, as well as all kinds of stuff. I am going to close up, and I want to thank all of you. I didn't specifically thank Pam for being on this whole time, timing us. Thank you so much for helping us stay on track. I hope that we will all continue to share the challenges, joys, and gifts of service at meetings and beyond the meetings with sponsees and during your outreach calls and by being of service in the fellowship. Please, once again, to remember to make a Seventh Tradition donation to CEA Howe in support of this workshop. Again, you can go to ceahowe.org. Click on Support the Fellowship on the top pink border and click on the Seventh Tradition tab. I wanted to be of service by holding the firm boundaries of ending on time, so it looks like I was successful in that hope and wish. And we will close with the Serenity Prayer after a moment of silence.
God, accept the things we cannot change.
Be done.